Welcome back to Advent of Carols from Verse Notes. I'm Jerry Towler, and today we're talking about O Holy Night, a hymn that was at one point considered a French revolutionary anthem. If you want to listen to this song before we dive in, you'll find some links in the show notes. Now today I want to do two big things with this hymn. First, I want to show you just how much scripture is packed into it. And second, I want to highlight how the parts that we skip actually really matter. See, most recordings only sing verse 1, or at most verses 1 and 3. Verse 2 almost never shows up, which is a real shame. So we're going to look at every verse. Let's dig in. Verse 1, as usual, is a lot of scene setting, or at least it feels like it at first with those stars brightly shining. You think it's just going to be standard Luke 2 Christmas imagery, but as it goes on, you get much deeper theology than I really ever paid attention to. Long lay the world in sin and error pining is not just original sin from the fall of Adam, but it's also Paul's image of the earth groaning in anticipation of the coming of the Messiah. And a thrill of hope reminds me of the disciples of John the Baptist when they come up to Jesus and they say, "Hey, are you the guy that was prophesied, or should we wait for another?" Well, it turns out that he is the guy who was prophesied, and the weary world rejoices at the new and glorious morn. And the right response from us to that is the next line, "Fall on your knees." And that's that giant soaring moment of vocal prowess, that part that every big-voiced singer lives for. And it's also exactly what we should be doing. Verse 2 also starts off gently, talking about the light of faith and the guiding light of the star. But the most important lines in this verse, and the reason that it's so upsetting to me that we leave it out sometimes, comes all the way at the end, right after the King of Kings in a manger. Here it is. "In all our trials, born to be our friend. He knows our need, to our weakness is no stranger." These lines are critical for those of us who are human and sinners and weak and tempted, which is all of us. In Hebrews, we learn that Jesus is our great high priest, and that because he took on flesh and blood and felt our weakness, he is therefore able to help us when we are tempted. Maybe it's just me, but I need that promise every day of a God who became one of us and didn't just set up in heaven saying, "Do this, don't do that." And finally, here's verse 3, which is why this song became part of a French Revolution in the 1840s, not the one you're thinking of from 1789, but a later one. But before we get to that, we hear that his law is love, that, you know, the greatest commandment, and his gospel is peace. But that's also kind of weird because actually Jesus says that he comes not to bring peace, but a sword. The peace, the promised peace, comes in his second coming, which is long after Christmas and wise men. And then, finally, we get these lines that really became a problem in 19th century France. "Chains shall break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease." It doesn't seem so weird today, but it was a problem back then. Now, the natural Bible connection is to the tiny little book of Philemon, where Paul is writing to this slave owner, and he says, "Hey man, your escaped slave, Onesimus, has found his way here to Rome, and he's been super helpful to me, and he's become a Christian just the way that you're a Christian, so I'm sending him back to you, but I hope that you will welcome him as a brother and not as a slave." And this is the ethic of the New Testament, where masters and slaves are no longer just master and slave, but instead now both brothers under Christ. Now, obviously, oppression still exists. We don't yet have the equality that we look for, but this promise points forward towards Christ's return. And we're going to get to those politics, but before that, I want to look at just a little bit of history of this poem. It was written in the mid-1840s, 1843 and 1847, I've seen kind of both dates, by a French wine merchant named Placide Capot, allegedly in a single sitting on a six-hour stagecoach ride. And he called the poem Minuit Chrétien, meaning Midnight Christians, and it was originally much more of a Charles Wesley type of poem, singing our theology. He wrote things like, "Man God descended to erase original sin and cease the wrath of his father." It got some music in 1847 by a guy named Adolphe Adam, who was mostly known at the time for writing secular operas. And then it was performed that year at Christmas Mass in Rocamar, which is the church that Capot had originally written the poem for in celebration of getting some new stained glass windows. But then it's the next year, 1848, where things really go off the rails, because by that time France is in the midst of a revolution. And the French poet Lamartine calls this nice Christmas carol a religious Marseillaise. And you might know that La Marseillaise is the somewhat bloody national anthem of France. And so here we have this Christmas hymn that also seems to call for revolution. It calls for liberty and equality and brotherhood, which is exactly the motto of France today, liberté, égalité, fraternité. But it's quite uncomfortable if you're King Louis-Philippe I in 1848 and your people are in open revolt. There's so much French history bound up in this poem that I almost forgot to ask how we got an English version, and it turns out that story is also super interesting. Because the English text is not a translation at all. It's actually a rewrite by the Unitarian minister John Sullivan Dwight in 1855. And he replaces these hardcore lines like, "It is for us he was born, he suffered and died," with much more poetic phrases like, "With all our hearts we praise his holy name." He turns the powerful "await your deliverance," which is a great scriptural instruction, to "oh, hear the angel voices." I'm pretty happy we got the English version we have. I like it. So we have this gorgeous hymn. But as I said at the beginning, almost no artists actually sing the whole hymn. In fact, I was looking for versions for the show notes, and I almost couldn't find an artist who actually sang verse 2. I tried a lot of the standard Christmas artists, and they all had these just beautiful versions, but most of them only sing the first verse, and none at all use the second. Even the Mormon Tabernacle Choir skips verse 2. So I finally found a version by a choir at King's College, Cambridge, so that we could listen to the second verse. And of course, that is linked in the show notes. I want to remind you again how crucial verse 2 is. "Jesus was born to be our friend, and to our weakness, he's no stranger." That's really critical about who Jesus is to us. That he's one of us, flesh and blood with us. He knows our weaknesses, our trials, our temptations. He's felt them, and so he can help us when we feel them. And so it turns out this song that I thought was just an epic vocal showcase is really this rich, biblical, theologically bold hymn. Really the cinematic version of the incarnation of hope breaking into a weary world. And that's why we sing. Thanks for joining me today for Advent of Carols. If you'd like to help make more projects like this possible, check out Verse Notes Commons at versenotes.org/commons. And we'll be back tomorrow with another Carol of Christmas. If you've got thoughts about today's carol, I'd love to hear them. You can always reach me at jerry@versenotes.org. And if you enjoyed the episode, the best gift you can give me is to pass it along to someone else who would enjoy it too.